Hello and welcome to another episode of Midwest Magic. I am your host, Ethan Richardson, with my co-hosts...
Justin Washburn.
What a butthead. Mike Thompson.
What? Well, historically...
Last time you said...
Historically, Justin goes first. I mean, just...
Yeah, and then Mike made this a point when I waited Mike last week. I was like, I'm going to let Mike go first.
We never finished that episode. We never finished recording that.
Yeah, we did.
We had problems. We had issues. You know, a blizzard happened.
That's the big thing. First big announcement for today, for this podcast is how we kind of shit the bed last week because none of us were really like in great moods most of the time, and then technology didn't cooperate, and so it was just kind of a whole shit show of podcast excellence that we strive to deliver here at Midwest Magic. So we're back though, and at least so far things are going well. So obviously the big news that we are, implored to talk about is of course the Pro Tour, which was both, Oath of the Gatewatch Limited and the Modern format. So, there was a little controversy, I should say, due to lack of a better word, about the top eight. What would that be, gentlemen? What is this thing that the Magic community is flipping out about, per se?
Affinity.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Good.
You nailed it.
Yeah, it's just all those colorless creatures are just so broken.
Well, okay, that's closer.
Arcbound Ravager, the bane of everyone.
No, it's Eldrazi.
Yeah, Thought Not Seer.
Reality Smasher.
Yeah, now we're just listing them all.
The worst one of all, though, Eldrazi Sky Spotter.
No,
worst
Drowner of Hope.
Personally, I rate Drowner of Hope above Eldrazi Sky Spotter, so I'll go there.
But Sky Spotter blocks the Ink Buff deck.
That's true. Anyway, okay, so Eldrazi just totally dominated this top eight, being six out of the eight decks, admittedly in varying, well, not too varying, but varying flavors of Eldrazi.
They have different lands.
Yeah, different lands. Some had some colors. Frank Lepore's list, admittedly, is completely different. Well, not completely, but, you know, it's based off a lot of the processor mechanic. I mean, it's different than the other ones. But essentially what happened was, what's that team's name?
East-West.
Yeah, East-West Bowl. They showed up to the Pro Tour, the Blue-Red Eldrazi list, and then Channel Fireball and Face-to-Face Games teamed up and showed up with this colorless Eldrazi list, and then Frank Lepore is just himself, and I don't know, I'm a huge fan of him now, but I didn't know
he came to this deck. Apparently on Magic Online he was testing it, and this was the version of Eldrazi he liked. I didn't know he was playing a one of Worldbreaker, though.
Of course.
I just never saw it. Never saw it.
Yeah.
So, the winner of the Pro Tour overall was JC Tao. He's playing the Blue-Red Eldrazi variant. And I think they said it was like his third Pro Tour ever.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's pretty good. And he beat Even Flock, who is a former Pro Tour champion. So, he's got quite a bit of bragging rights here. But the blue-red list, it's pretty easy, so I'll just go over it pretty quick. It's, now, this is strange for Modern, so bear with me. 33 creatures, 4 Drowner of Hope, 4 Eldrazi Mimic, 3 Eldrazi Obligator, 4 Eldrazi Sky Spawner, 4 Endless One, 4 Reality Smasher, 2 Ruination Guide, 4 Thought Not Seer, 4 Vile Aggregate. He's got 3 Instants and 3 Dismember. And then 24 lands, including Caverns of Souls, Eldrazi Temple, Eye of Ugin, 1 Gemstone Caverns, 2 Island, 4 Scalding Tarns, 4 Shivan Reef, and 2 Steam Vents. Sideboard is 15 cards. with the Spellskite, 3 Hercules Recall, 3 Stubborn Denial, 2 Chalice of the Void, 1 Ratchet Bomb, 1 Tomb of the Spirit Dragon, 2 Gutshot, and 2 Relic of Progenitus. Okay. So what do we think?
You know, I love that Gemstone Caverns.
True.
The spicy meatball.
God damn it. Not that again.
You know, when I first saw this list, it was day one, like round 6 or 7, he was on camera, and his hand was like, Eldrazi Sky Spawner, Endless One, Eldrazi Mimic, Eye of Ugin, Reality Smasher, and Ruination Guide, with like an island, I think. And they were talking about the cards in his deck, and the only thing, like, you can justify, maybe not in Modern per se, but you can justify all of these cards because they're solid cards. But they said Ruination Guide and Vile Aggregate, and my brain just exploded. I just couldn't. But then they were talking to him later, and apparently there were lots of instances where Vile Aggregate was just a better Tarmogoyf.
Yep.
And that comparison scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a couple rounds. I watched almost all of the top 8. I wasn't, like, super into it. But, you know, there's just some kind of weird interactions. Most of the games I watched were turn 1, Eye of Ugin, Eldrazi Mimic, and then, like, going into your Thought Knot Seers and your Reality Smashers. I think Reality Smasher's probably the thing I witnessed get cast the most.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's just, this deck is just brutal. It's just angry and Eldrazi-y. And, I did see, I think it was in the finals, maybe either that or, maybe it was a match that this guy had against LSV, but he got that, opening hand Gemstone Caverns, and it was just not even a contest.
He didn't put it into play because that game he was on the play.
Really?
Yeah, he was on the play, and Gemstone Caverns only comes into play when you're on the draw.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
The one game that he played against LSV, though, where he goes, Eye of Ugin, Mimic, Endless One, go, I was just like, oh my lord, what?
Mm-hmm. Kill you turn 3?
Because didn't he play Reality Smasher mm-hmm. on that next turn, and then he just went, kill you? And just
he killed him on turn 3.
I'm like, interesting.
So, can I just say that I am extremely excited that there is a deck in any format that makes Tomb of the Spirit Dragon worth playing?
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
It's in the sideboard, damn
it. Hold on, though. Didn't it get played at Pro Tour Dragons of Tarkir?
No, it was Pro Tour Origins.
And the colorless.
Blue red they played it because they couldn't beat the red burn deck that was going around.
I forgot.
Fast aggressive decks. They were just like, well, we have to gain life.
I didn't really watch much of Pro Tour Origins. I forgot about that. That's.
Oh, it's okay.
That's good.
I'm actually playing a Tomb of the Spirit Dragon in my Sander deck right now. So.
Whatever. I don't even know. I don't know what's going on in your life. All right.
You don't know me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about the second place list, which is the other flavor of Eldrazi. Mike, why don't you take us through this list quick?
Are we doing the colorless one or the other?
Yeah, just go Even Phlox list.
Oh, Even Phlox list. Okay. Even Phlox was playing actual colorless Eldrazi. He was playing 4 Eldrazi Mimics, 4 Endless Ones, 4 Mattery Shapers, 4 Reality Smashers, 4 Simian Spirit Guides, 2 Spellskites, and 4 Thought Knot Seers, playing the full 4 Dismembers, which is ridiculous to me, 4 Chalice of the Void, 2 Ratchet Bomb, and his lands are 4 Blinkmoth Nexus, 4 Eldrazi Temple, 4 Eye of Ugin, 4 Ghost Quarter, 3 Mutavault, 3 Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, and 2 copies of Wastes. In the sideboard, he had a Spellskite, a Ratchet Bomb, 3 Oblivion Sowers, 2 Pithing Needles, a Warping Whale, 4 Relic of Progenitus, and 3 Gutshots.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so...
It was.
Now, so, if we look closely at all of the creatures They're almost all the same. You all right there, Mike?
Oh, is it me that's cutting out? Because well, I'm...
Yeah.
Ethan turned into a robot on mine.
Okay. I thought it was me cutting out, so I was just not saying anything.
Oh, gotcha.
And I think it's... Yeah, I just have, like, weird pauses where literally no one is talking.
Weird. Anyway, let's just try to continue and power on through it. All the creatures are pretty much the same, except we've added simian spirit guides, spell skites, and so you just cast really powerful Eldrazi things, and then you dismember things, and then you play chalices.
Yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it.
Yeah.
I heard, I don't remember who played it against Burn, but they, turn one, they exiled a Simian Spirit Guide, played a land, and played a Chalice on one against Burn. The Burn player just looks at his hand, and he's like, that's good, and that's...
It was Shuhei Nakamura playing against Makihito Mahara.
Okay, God. I was like, I didn't remember who it was.
Oh yeah, it was too, like...
Someone just said that, and I'm like, that... If I was the Burn player, I'd be so salty. I'd be like,
Yeah. Well, they're both Japanese, so like they know what the other one is playing because they hang out and they play together or whatever. Shuhei tests with Channel Fireball, but Shuhei kind of just, he looked at his hand and he smiled and he looked at Mahara. And Mahara just gives him the thumbs up and they're talking and the table judge tells him to start. And he actually exiles the spirit guide before he plays his land. And the whole time the camera's on Mahara, and Mahara's just like, you can just see the depression in his face before the chalice even comes into play.
Oh, God, that's funny.
And Nakamura just kind of shrugs and passes the turn back to him.
Good old Chalice of the Void.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so, what is the benefits of running colorless, I guess?
Well, you get, like, in this list, you get to play, like, some Muta Vaults, which sometimes, like, they just become beaters. Same thing with Blank Moth. You get a cut on, like, the Drowners and the Vile Aggregates and play things like Chalice of the Void and Ratchet Bomb, which I think are both very good. Ratchet Bomb is insane against the Mirror, because Endless One costs zero. And so if you're able just to pop someone else's Endless One or tick up a Ratchet Bomb... If there's like a couple mimics on the other side and just blow up their mimics, I think it's very good.
Agreed.
Seems all right.
I think the biggest thing for me is that with the colorless deck, you're more geared towards those just I'm going to beat you as fast as possible draws, where the blue-red deck is going to kind of grind you out a little bit and just build out a board. And then there are games where they just reach that point where they have two Drowner of Hopes in play and a whole bunch of Scions, and they can just tap down all your shit and kill you. So, I think there's definitely plus and minuses to both of them, but I think the colorless version is more geared towards the metagame, whereas the blue-red Eldrazi deck is just a good deck.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's changing modern. Thumbs up, somewhat sarcastically. Mm. So third place.
I for one accept our Eldrazi overlords.
Of course you do. So third place was Louis Scott Fargus playing like the exact same list. Yeah.
Literally identical.
Yep.
75.
Next. Yeah. Okay. So then here we go. Next one, something different was Patrick Dickman playing Affinity. Justin, why don't you run through this list real quick?
Good old Affinity. Lose to it every single time. He's playing four Arcbound Ravagers, four Master of Ethereum, three Memnite, four Ornithopter, four Signal Pest, two Spellskite, four Steel Overseer, four Vault Scourge, two Thoughtcast, four Cranial Plating, four Mox Opal, four Springleaf Drum, four Dark Steel Citadels, which is part of the land, but Wizards, it's counted as an artifact. He's playing a random, his basic is an island. Sideboard, he's got two Etched Champion, one Chalice of the Void, two Garipur Aether Grid, one Gutshot, two Thoughtseize, three Ancient Grudge, one Dismember, one Grafdigger's Cage, one Stubborn Denial, and one Whip Flare.
So, I think, I don't hardly know anything at all about Affinity. Is there anything really particularly new about this since the Splinter Twin ban?
Master of Ethereum's back.
Yeah, I know. Like, I heard some talk about that. So
yeah, there were some versions that played it, but a lot of the versions were playing, like, instead of the island, they were playing a mountain.
Yeah.
And this is just like, basically, I'm going to pull my whole hand out, and then I'll have this thought cast in my hand that costs a single blue, and then I just get to start refilling a little bit.
Yeah.
But a Master of Ethereum just pumps your entire team. So
Thoughtcast is actually the biggest update. Master of Ethereum and Thoughtcast both are cards that have been played in Affinity lots of different times. It's not new tech by any means, but Master of Ethereum coming back is in answer to people expecting the Eldrazi decks to pop up, because they basically took Etched Champion and completely got rid of it. It had already been kind of on the back burner, but they got rid of it completely because it just doesn't do anything against Eldrazi. Protection from all colors does not give you protection from colorless, obviously. And Master of Ethereum being a 5/5, just if you have a Darksteel Citadel, a Springleaf Drum, a Ravager, and a Signal Pest is pretty good. So I think that's just a given switch. It's just something that was going to happen. Thoughtcast coming back is also a lot more important, in my opinion, than Master of Ethereum. I don't think I've seen a Thoughtcast in an Affinity deck that wasn't run by Frank Karsten in a year and a half, probably. People just don't play that anymore, so it's kind of nice to see that card come back, go to more of a traditional Affinity bent.
Alright, hold that thought. I have to go let my dog out real quick.
Alright.
Oh, Mike, you should watch Jerry Thompson's
Grixis. Oh my god, stop that. What? I should do what?
Watch Jerry Thompson's Grixis Control and Standard video.
I already did.
I liked it. I liked the list, actually.
Yeah, I tweaked it a little bit, but not.
I do like the one Magmatic Insight.
That's actually the card that I like the least.
I don't know. I think it's spicy. You're pitching away a land, which one of the games was really bad, but...
Yeah. Are you guys still here?
I'm still here.
Okay. I don't know what happened. I disappeared for a moment.
Ooh, another Commander versus video. All right. Awesome. Well, I also have to tweak my standard deck.
Still working?
Yeah, but I can barely hear you.
Okay, I think it turned on my other mic. Hold on.
Gotcha.
How about now?
I can hear you better.
All right.
All right.
Adjust bandwidth.
I hate how the wizard sides put Darksteel Citadels with the artifacts. Yes, they're artifacts, but also land. Deceiving.
Yeah, it happens sometimes.
So they're basically playing... Pascal Maynard and Hickman are playing only... There's only some subtle differences. The main board. Wow. How's it called? Maynard's playing too stubborn in that main board? Jeez.
Yep.
That Seagate Rickage in the sideboard.
Well, the only difference are the two Welding Jars versus the two Spell Scouts and then the...
Too stubborn in all, so two Podcasts.
Yeah.
Alright, I'm back.
Yo!
Okay. Where were we?
We were talking about...
Affinity, robots.
Affinity, Thoughtcast... Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, cool. So, that's Affinity. Then we can go down the next one. Shuhei Nakamura, who's playing Colorless Eldrazi. All right.
Yeah. Yep.
And then we can go to Andrew Brown, who's playing Blue-Red Eldrazi.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah, well, all right. So, that's that list. And then we can go to Pascal Maynard, playing Affinity. Oh.
Oh.
This is at least a more different Affinity.
It's just a couple changes.
There's actually only four cards different.
You know what? Alright, well I'm gonna...
The sideboards are a fair bit different.
Yeah, so shut up. this list is pretty simple. 27 creatures, 4 Arcbound Ravager, 4 Master of Aetherium, 3 Memnite, 4 Ornithopter, 4 Signal Pest, 4 Steel Overseer, and 4 Vault Scourge. It has 2 Stubborn Denials with 18 additional artifacts, including the 4 Dark Steel Citadel, which is actually a land, so shut up, Wizards. 2 Welding Jar, 4 Springleaf Drum, 4 Mox Opal, 4 Cranial Plating, and then other lands, which include Blink Moth Nexus and Ink Moth Nexuses. Yay!
Yeah.
Sideboard is 3 Etch Champions, 1 Graf Digger's Cage, 1 Relic of Progenitus, 1 Whip Flare, 2 Ancient Grudge, 1 Gutshot, 2 Thoughtseize, 1 Seagate Wreckage, 1 Gyarapur Aether Grid, 1 Ray of Revelation, and 1 Torpor Orb. Torb. Okay, so we know what all these other cards do. What Seagate Wreckage? Why is that in the sideboard?
Affinity's really good at just dumping its hand.
Right. So, well, what I wonder, you know, clearly it's being, you know, would be put in and be used as some kind of utility land. Like you don't just put it in there for more colorless mana. You put it in there because you want to be able to use its second ability, which is for 2 and a colorless, tap it, draw a card, and you can activate it when you don't have any cards in your hand. That seems good.
Definitely.
Why would you not run that main board?
I believe it comes into play tapped, maybe. No, it doesn't. I lied. Normally, I would say it's because they only play one land outside of the standard... outside of the standard 4-8-12 Nexus, Glimmer Void, Ink Moth Nexus, and then one basic land, and the 4 Dark Steel Citadels. But that's not the case, because he's actually trimmed a Glimmer Void for a mountain, or an island, however you decide to look at it. I think it's just a way to play it out of the board against the matchups that maybe are more grindy, whether it be Jund or something like that, or I don't know if he expected maybe to see some blue-white control lists or something like that, or Jeskai control lists, sorry. But I like the card, and I think it's probably one of the cards that are most likely to make Affinity better. But whether it's good enough or not, I don't know.
Interesting. Well, I mean, it's cool to see cards you don't expect to see in Modern. I always enjoy that. And I did not expect to see Seagate Wreckage in a sideboard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of neat. Let's talk about Frank Lepore, though. Because he's kind of cool, and I'm kind of a fan of him now. He had an article published on Star City Games today on the premium side that I actually read the whole thing. I don't do that with Star City Games premium articles anymore.
Yeah, he writes some good articles. He used to write for TCG Player, and he's done some really, really good, like, not just individual articles, but he did a Modern Monday series on TCG Player that I used to watch every Monday. He did video deck techs, which in my personal opinion were not that great, but they were informative. They helped people who were less informed about Magic learn quite a bit about a deck that they might want to play or something like that. So
very cool. I was not familiar with him at all, but once I kind of heard his story a little bit throughout watching coverage, I was a lot more interested. And then again, his article today was really good. But this was his first Pro Tour ever because when he qualified for the first time, he was dating Melissa Del Toro, who was then hired on at Wizards, and significant others of Wizards employees cannot participate in Magic tournaments that have prize payouts of over $250. The Pro Tour definitely fell in that category. So this was his first Pro Tour he got to attend since Melissa is no longer working for Wizards. And yeah, he played Processor Eldrazi. Mike, you want to take us through this list pretty quick?
Yeah, sure. Frank Lepore, just to clarify, this is like the list that I think is the best Eldrazi list for that tournament. I think the other guys metagamed, and they were better prepared to beat other people, like the rest of the meta, but Frank's deck kind of next-leveled them a little bit. He ended up catching some really bad beats in some of his matchups against the colorless Eldrazi deck, but I think his deck was quite a bit more streamlined than the colorless version or the blue-red version. Anyway, he has 29 creatures, 4 Blight Herders, 4 Drowner of Hope, 4 Eldrazi Mimic, 4 Matter Reshaper, 4 Reality Smasher, 4 Thought Not Seer, 4 Wasteland Strangler, and a Singleton Worldbreaker. 4 Relic of Progenitus, 2 Scrabbling Claws, and then 25 lands, which is a really strange mainboard deck list, but 4 Cavern of Souls, 4 Corrupted Crossroads. Of course, he has the 8 Eldrazi lands, the 4 Temples and the 4 Eye, 4 Ghost Quarters, an Island, a Swamp, and 3 Urborg Tomb of Yawgmoth. The sideboard contains 2 Spellskites, 2 Ratchet Bombs, 3 Sun Droplets, 2 Warping Whales, Warping Whale, excuse me, 2 and 4 Spatial Contortion.
Okay, so I find it interesting that it's like a Sultai deck, because it's black and blue, and it's got Worldbreaker, so it's also green, but his only source of green is Cavern of Souls, and Corrupted Crossroads, I guess.
Corrupted Crossroads can make green, yep.
Yep. So kind of explain, what do you mean when you say that you thought it was more streamlined and is better, quote?
So I think one of the biggest things that the other decks had going for them when you go the colorless route is that they just beat people so fast. Like, you're winning on turn 3 and turn 4. If that's the case, why are you even bothering with cards like Ratchet Bomb and Chalice of the Void and Dismember? Just fill your deck full of cards that make you beat your opponents face in with giant Eldrazi creatures faster. Now, that may or may not be the case, but I think Lepore's deck is just, it's doing both of the things that the other two decks wanted to do. It's playing the higher-end Eldrazi that give you reach, so to speak, with Drowner of Hope and Blight Herder. Wasteland Strangler is kind of like built-in removal. Worldbreaker is good against Tron decks, and it's just a giant creature. Blocks things that have been equipped up with Cranial Plating. All of the cards in the deck already do so many of the things that you want your spells to do anyway, and I think that's where this deck wants to be. It just wants to play creature after creature after creature, and those creatures are spell-like creatures. They're doing things when they enter the battlefield or when you cast them to stop your opponent's game plan. Thought Not Seer was one of the most broken cards I saw played this weekend. Like, 90% of the time that card resolved, it just took the opponent's game plan and threw it out the window.
Yep.
And I just think doing it as streamlined as possible is the way to go. He's playing the six relic type effects just because of Blight Herder and Wasteland Strangler to just try and make them better. But to be completely honest, those cards are just kind of good against the metagame right now anyway. So there's no reason to not play them. But I think his sideboard setup also, obviously it's very spell heavy, but it's built to beat everything that his main board can't interact with. Spatial Contortion kills lots of stuff in Modern. Lots of stuff in Modern. It's almost like a Lightning Strike instead of a Lightning Bolt, so like an Incinerate, something like that. Plus it also can help your creatures deal extra damage. Sun Droplet is a lot better than people give it credit for against Burn decks. Warping Whale, while it would have been insane against Splinter Twin, it's still very good. Even in the mirror, it kills Eldrazi Mimic. So I watched him play this list and the way it interacted just by using creatures with the other decks, and it just seems so much more streamlined than the sometimes really, really busted draws, but a lot of the time mediocre draws of the colorless Eldrazi deck.
That all makes sense to me.
Oh.
Justin, do you have any opinions about the top 8 of the Pro Tour?
Well, there's a lot of colorless creatures everywhere.
That's a fact, not an opinion.
Student assessment.
Always getting to my opinion. Don't rush me. Oh, man. I think it was just kind of like the Eldrazi decks were a thing, but they had, like, no one was working on them because, you know, there was, like, why do that when I can play Splinter Twin? I think was a lot of, and then they banned Splinter Twin, and they go, well, let's work on the Eldrazi list, and it was kind of interesting to see a lot of different takes on it. Like, you've got Frank Laporte's processor Eldrazi, where it works on the processors, and then you have the blue-red Eldrazi, where it's going to just create a board state, and then play a Drowner of Hope, tap your whole team down, and kill you. And then you have Littlest Eldrazi, which is just, I'm going to play all these dudes, I'm going to kill you on, like, turn three sometimes. I think it's pretty insane how all these teams built relatively the same list, but there were, you can, like, if you take them, you can figure out the changes.
That's fair.
But, yeah.
And it's, we had this talk where, you know, it's like, how do you beat Eldrazi? And we're like, well, you Blood Moon them, but even turn three Blood Moon doesn't even stop them. Like, sometimes you're dead on turn three. You don't even get to cast your Blood Moon. Like, if, and sometimes Blood Moon doesn't even help, because they'll just keep playing the creatures.
I don't know. I think if you're talking about Blood Moon and how it interacts and how it tries to beat the deck, how many decks are going to beat that Eldrazi deck playing Mimic into Reality Smasher? There's just none.
Yeah.
And even if you Lightning Bolt one of their creatures and not die, you're going to untap, play Blood Moon, and die anyway. So this is one of my biggest qualms about people when they're evaluating Magic cards, is if you're talking about a situation where a card doesn't matter, why even consider that card as an answer? The card might be good against the deck, but when you use a place where nothing is going to get you out of said situation, saying a card is bad in that situation is a really, really bad way to evaluate a card in a certain metagame or in a certain interaction or something like that.
That's fair. I was just stating that people were like, well, Blood Moon, it's like, well, sometimes you just can't because you're dead.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like you just play, you know, like if you play a very fair creature deck, you could possibly be the Eldrazi list, but I feel like the Eldrazi are public enemy number one right now, and people are just trying to figure out how to beat them, like how to beat the deck in general.
Mm-hmm. Because
it just kind of took over the format.
It did.
The commentators even said, we haven't seen and they were all different decks, but they were all Eldrazi, a deck do, like, take over a format like this, for a while since Cobblade. Since Cobblade was a thing, they said they haven't seen anything in other formats that come relatively close to how the Eldrazi did this weekend.
Yeah, and that's true. That really is true, but...
All right, so we get to the pressing question then. Okay. Are the Eldrazi lands broken?
Ilugin is broken. I don't think Eldrazi Temple is broken.
I will be on the side. I am on Mike's side after hearing him and Taylor gripe about it for a while. I do think, yeah, Eldrazi Temple creates two, but Ilugin lets you play the Mimic Endless One on turn one. Like, the explosive plays. And it also, when you are in a grinding game, it lets you just search up anything in your deck. Like, oh, I'm going to search up a Reality Smasher. Oh, I'm going to search up another Reality Smasher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I can see that.
You just start to, like, you're just like, I'm going to keep doing this, and if you do not stop me, you're going to die.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, I can realistically see I getting banned, because if they ban I, it doesn't destroy the Eldrazi deck.
Nope, exactly.
The Eldrazi deck won't be as good, clearly, but it's too good, so that's fine. But, so if that happens, then what happens to Tron?
Nothing.
Tron loses one land.
I mean, nothing that's at all. Fair. I don't know much about Tron, so I didn't know how integral it was.
No,
can't cast their mana? Oh, no.
To be honest, it does the exact same thing to Tron as it does to the Eldrazi deck. It gives... Tron is the exact same situation. It is a deck that is hyper-consistent, can dig for its answers, and then also has this card in the late game that allows them to play towards the late game. And by taking away Eye of Ugin from the Eldrazi decks, it does the exact same thing to Tron. And doesn't destroy the deck either. It just makes it less consistent, less able to win the games that it should win. Big mana decks should not be able to win the games that go to turn 12 and 15 by just searching up a card every turn until they get to, Emrakul.
For 13 mana.
Yeah, it's just, they should not be able to do that, and by taking away I, it kind of polices them a little bit without really hurting the deck.
That's fair. So I don't know if you guys had, well, I can send it to you here, the, I didn't know if there was any other decks you wanted to talk about.
I know there was a Scapeshift deck that went 8-2.
Yeah.
I don't believe it was a, like, Bring to Light or a Rogue Scapeshift.
No,
I think it was just
it was red-green.
Yeah.
So, let's see here. We've got, let's see, that guy was in top 8, that guy was in top 8. Blue-red Eldrazi, colorless Eldrazi. Matthew Rogers Court combo is kind of cool, because it's the Archangel Spike Feeder combo. Yeah, I knew Justin would like that.
Yeah.
Of course he would.
It's old pod combo.
Yeah, but it's just with Court of Calling now.
Oh, Sam Black was playing Lantern Control. See, that's the deck that everyone's looking to beat out the... Like, well, if anyone can do it, Lantern Control can do it, because they're playing Ensnaring Bridge.
You can't lock them fast enough.
Yeah.
Exactly. Cost 3.
Exactly.
That's the dumbest. Everyone's like,
Lantern Control can beat them. I'm like, well, if you think that they can survive, yeah, sure.
Let's see.
Zero sounds.
That's Zulus.
Reduke on Jund.
Philip Braverman.
Aurelax on Abzan Company.
Yep.
Zoo.
This Zoo deck is playing 3 Huntmasters and 2 Magus of the Moon main board.
Ooh. Which Zoo list are you on?
Philip Braverman, right below Sam Black. He finished 8-2.
Okay.
Man, I might build this list.
There you go. Well, because a little farther down, Michael Majors is playing a different Zoo list.
Oh, he was playing Zuzu with Bushwhacker.
Yeah.
Or, that seems pretty good.
Goblin Bushwhacker? Or
Reckless Bushwhacker.
Reckless Bushwhacker.
Oh, man.
That's pretty cool.
Got him. He's playing a Devastating Summons. You know what that does?
Yes, I do.
I do now.
Devastating Summons is insane. Devastating Summons is awesome.
Oh, my God.
I like how they call Red-Green Scapeshift Red-Green Valakut on the wizard side.
Well,
oh, yeah.
It's not exactly like...
It's
well,
Scapeshift, goddammit.
Right, but it's...
No, it's a Valakut deck, though.
It's Titan Shift.
Yeah.
As some call it.
Momota was playing Through the Breach.
There were a couple people playing Through the Breach.
Yeah, so that's about all the exciting things. That's about it.
Yeah.
So that's the Pro Tour, ladies and gentlemen. Broken shit that people are going to whine about for the next 2 months until something gets banned. Yay!
Yep.
Boom, boom, shake the room.
Totes my goats. All right, well, a little more exciting for us locally. We all three played in a modern event in Hastings to moderate success for all three of us, actually.
I would say so.
So yep. You can check. I wrote a tournament report. It went up on cardconfidants.com today. You can check that out if you're at all interested. But I'll kind of give you the lowdown here as well. So we'll save the best for last. So Mike, you get to shut up for a little bit.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me I had to go first.
No. Justin, I didn't really get a chance to talk to you much during or after the event. So why don't you give us a little recap of your modern tournament at the TCG Player Bronze event hosted at Dungeon Dweller Gaming Supplies. Why don't you tell us a bit about that?
All right, so I chose to play Naya Company. The FNM before that, I went 0-3, and I was salty. I was like, I don't even know why I'm going to play this deck. And then a day later, I was like, you know what? I'm going to lay it out. So I laid it out, figured it all out, made some changes. And so round one, my opponent, I go turn one, Nacaudle, and then he goes turn one, Steam Bends, Shock, Fateless Slitting, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm playing Storm. I don't have hate for Storm. Uh-oh. And that game one, I got him down to exactly 3, and he just starts going off, you know? I'm just letting him. I have a lightning bolt. I have red mana open. I'm like, I'm just going to let you go off. He just starts going, and then he goes,
such a scumbag.
Rape shot, and I go, lightning bolt you. And he goes, okay. And then game two.
What do you mean?
You're such a scumbag. Why wouldn't you just bolt him?
If I don't let him go off, he could just assume, like, I want to see, I've never played Storm. I don't know how they go off.
Okay.
So I wanted to see how they do it.
So when you explain that you have a bolt in hand and you want to see him do that, don't explain it as, I just let him go off and then bolted him at the end. Explain it as, I wanted to see what the deck does.
Okay,
fair enough. Because it sounds a lot less scumbaggy when you say that.
Already a douchebag. So game two, I go, all right, and I keep kind of a mediocre hand, and he just comboed and killed me. I'm like, all right, game three, and I have a very aggressive start. I'm like, I think I can get this. And he just didn't even do anything. Like, he tried to, like, get something in his hand, but he could never just, like, get it, you know, like, to go off. And so I just beat him. And then round two, I played against a blue-red Prowess Burn deck with...
It was a Delver variant.
Yes, but it was playing Storm Chaser Mage.
It was also playing Lava Spike.
I know. It's blue-red burn.
It's not blue-red burn. It is a Delver variant.
Okay. Sorry, Delver champion. Anyway.
You're right. I will continue to champion it.
Anyways, game one got steamrolled. Game two, my one of Dromoka and me and won me the game.
Nice.
He went to go bolt me when I was at three. After he attacked, put me to three, and then taps out and goes bolt you. And I Dromoka's command, prevented the damage, and my smiter fought one of his dudes. And then I swung back and killed him. And then game three, it was very close. And I was just, I had more creatures than him. And he was trying to figure out if he could attack, put me low enough that if he draws a burn spell, he could win. But if he swings all out, I just crack back and kill him. And so he conceded to me. So I was like, all right, 2-0. And then I played Matt Lloyd, and our game one wasn't exciting because he mulled to five, and then he game two was very grindy, and it was getting to the point where I had a Noble Hierarch hitting for one each turn because I could not draw anything else. So a couple turns later, I get him down to three exactly, and I have no cards in hand, and he goes, pass the turn, and I draw a bolt, and I go, okay. I was like, I don't know if he has a counter spell because he has three cards in hand. And so I pass the turn, and I don't know if he just thought I didn't have anything in hand, but he taps all his blue sources to activate his creeping carpet, and in response I bolted him. So I got that game. And then round five, I was playing Burn, which I've never had a good time playing against. Game one, I got the game one, just barely, though. Then game two, I got just annihilated. And then game three was very grindy, and turns out Core Firewalker and Spellskite will just get you there. Like, when they're both on the battlefield against Burn, they have a hard time killing you.
Yeah.
Yeah, four Burn spells is a lot.
And then, it was also kind of funny, though, because I've always had this opinion that Burn is very greedy with their multicolored spells, and they only play mountains as basics. And so I brought in one Blood Moon, because I'm like, you know, if I can Blood Moon them, true, they have, like, Bolts and Searing Blazes and Lava Spikes, but if I already have, like, Spellskite and, like, Core Firewalker, and I Blood Moon them, they're just going to have a really hard time killing me.
That's a bold move, Cotton.
That's a very bold move.
I had the Core Firewalker and the Spellskite and a couple other creatures out, and he swung with his Goblin Guide, and I revealed the top card, and it's a Blood Moon. He goes, Blood Moon. I'm like, yep, Blood Moon. And he goes, huh. And I go, block with Wild McCall. And he goes, yeah. And then that turn, I had nothing else better to do because I had no cards in hand, so I just go Blood Moon. And then he goes, yeah, I'm going to concede to you. And that was game three. He showed his hand, and he was tapped out, and he showed his hand, and it was Boastrom Lightning Helix. I can't cast anything. And I'm like, got there.
Oh, my God.
And then round six, I was the only undefeated player at that point. And so I conceded to my co-host, Mike Thompson, to secure that we both would be one or two regardless. So we wouldn't have to play each other. And so then I get in the top eight, and my first opponent is Matt Wood. And I go, all right. And I barely get game one again. We actually played a very good game one. And then we get to see deck lists, and I look, and he actually has two Dispel main board. And I'm like, oh, that's going to be good to know. Because, you know, if he gets to low enough life total and I have a bolt, I could get dispelled. And game two, he got it with, like, both his Creeping Tar Pits and a Tassiger. Like, they just beat me down. And then game three was very grindy and drawn out. And then I got him down to two life, and he tapped out to bounce my Smiter and draw a card off Cryptic Command. And then I drew the bolt, and I bolted him again. So top deck bolts feel good. And then in the top four, I played Jacob Morrow, which games one and two, he won game one, and then I won game two. And then game three, I mulliganed down to five, which I kept three land, a Caudal Collected Company, and I scryed a Collected Company to the bottom, which I thought was the right choice, because I was like, well, I just need creatures and or lands to be able so I can collect a company, and he just had a really fast start, and I just couldn't beat it. So he won that one.
So what'd you end up placing overall?
I think third.
Yeah.
I was. I was second, so. Very third cool. With Naya Company.
Very cool.
Which, Tarmogoyf, as cool as Tarmogoyf is, it just really wasn't that impressive. Like, I cut Tarmogoyfs over anything else.
Interesting.
That's crazy to say, but.
Interesting. Well, my story is, you know, pretty close to a successful. I'd like to brag a little extra, though, because this particular tournament was literally my first time ever playing my deck. I chose Bring to Light Scapeshift, and I'd been working on building it slowly, but I'd never actually played it against another living human being. So I was interested to see how it was going to go for me. So the first round, I get matched up against Josh Beatem, who is playing Emiria Control or something. I don't know. I still don't exactly know what the deck does.
Emiria Control. Yep.
Yeah.
It stalls the whole game and then buys back a bunch of creatures.
So the first game we're playing, and he doesn't really do a whole lot, and then I just kind of... And he, like, I think it took him a second to figure out what I was playing, but then I just scapeshift comboed and killed him. And then game two, he just stalled it and then hit me with a bunch of Sun Titans. But the fun part was I didn't quite know what to side in against him. So what I sided in were just my three obstinate Baelothes. Because I was like, I don't know how to beat him, so I'll just hit him with creatures. Because I figured he would side out any of his removal because I'm running scapeshift. So I just put in creatures. So I outmeted him and I was proud of myself for like a minute and a half. But it's really great because I played one of the Baelothes and he's like, okay. And then I was like, I'm going to start hitting you with it now because I'm just playing a different game, I guess. So that was fun. And then game three, he had gained a bunch of life. And so I got scapeshift off and was like searching through my deck for the lands. And then I'd sacked eight lands and then got two Valakuts and the rest of the mountains, bolting him for like 36, which was awesome. But I sat there and I was like, you know, I had to do the math because this was only the second time ever the combo had ever gone off as I've been playing this deck. So I was like, okay, how does this work? Will it work if I do it this way? And so I had to think about it for a good, you know, couple seconds. And once I laid it all out, he sticks his hand out for me to shake it. And I was like, oh, good God. So I was really excited. I was on a high because, you know, I just won with my first go with this deck. I didn't even have a chance to even just, like, screw around with it before the tournament. I literally put cards in the sleeves and then went. So in round two, I played against 8-Rack, but he never... In game one, he never drew the rack, and so, or any of the other four racks.
Freaking affliction.
Yeah. So, turn one, he plays a Bloodstained Mire, fetches a swamp, and then Thought Seizes me. I was like, okay, here's the cards. I don't remember what I had. And so he picked something. I think it was a counter spell or something he picked out. So then I play a land or something, and then he goes, and then turn two, he plays another Thought Seize. So I was like, okay, he'll just kill himself. This is fine. And that's pretty much exactly what happened. So then I played like a Lumbering Falls, and then he ended up playing a third Thought Seize and discarding some other card I didn't really need. And so I was like, okay, fine, whatever. So then I start beating him down with Lumbering Falls. And he plays a Tassigar and starts hitting me with Tassigar. Well, because he had Thought Seized himself so much, his life was a lot lower than mine. So I was actually beating him in the race with my Lumbering Falls and his Tassigar to the point where he could no longer attack with Tassigar because I'd kill him with the Lumbering Falls.
Very nice.
And then so I drew the combo and I cast Bring to Light and then I got Scape Shift off of it and did the whole combo. So he got an idea of how it worked. And then game two, he drew the rack, and then I had, of course, sided in all the Obstinate Baloths, because the Baloths have the clause that if you have to discard them, they go onto the battlefield instead. And so he got me down to, like, 3 life, and I actually just hard cast a Baloth to gain 4 life, and started beating him down with that, and he killed it, and then I Scape Shift comboed, and it was great. And so I was 2-0, in my first modern tournament with this new deck I had just built, never play tested. And then I go into round 3. Where I played against my lovely co-host, Mike Thompson, playing Blue Red Delver. And what did we say? Who got game one? You got game one, didn't you?
I think... Hold on. Oh, you won game one because I wrote down here, I hate this matchup.
Okay, so I think you ran out of counters in your hand, and then I just comboed.
Yep.
And then
I misplayed a little bit, but it wasn't anything like game breaking necessarily because I had soft counters anyway. So
right. Game two, then you blood mooned me, you butthole. Which,
yeah.
The funny thing about that
you play
was...
The fetch, you play the fetch and fetch for a duel, and then you play the fetch and fetch for a duel.
Yeah, that's the funny part about it, is I legitimately forgot that Blood Moon was a thing. I play Modern so infrequently, it just did not cross my mind that that was a card that Mike would possibly side in against me. So I didn't even think to do anything about it. And so he Blood Mooned me, and... killed me pretty easily. And then game three was a lot grindier, if I remember correctly.
Three was a really fun game. A really fun game. If you had gotten off right off the bat game, or turn one or two, you would have had a much better chance. But I think that was the big defining factor, is that you didn't have any of the early ramp in that game.
Yeah. But, it was a lot grindier. I was killing your things. You were stopping my things. It was fun stuff. But I ended up losing.
There was a real brutal anger in game three where I was like, okay, well, I have this young Pyromancer that I just cast. I dealt you three damage off of it. I'm going to counter your spell on your turn and then spell snare. And you tried to resolve... A Search for Tomorrow, and I spell pierced it, and then you played another land and angered my board, and I went, oh god, I don't know if I can win. Like, in my head, I was just like, that was bad. But it must have worked out. I think I ended up drawing 2 counters at the end, but
yeah,
it was not an enjoyable game towards the end there.
Yeah, but I ended up losing, so that was my first loss for the day. My next match was against Buckles, and this was probably my favorite series of games, just because, you know, he plays, you know, I had not played against Boggles with this deck. My usual interaction with Boggles is usually me getting angry because I'm playing Grixis and have no interaction with Boggles. So he plays his turn one scout elf thing. All right, fine. I play like a land and I think I suspend a search for tomorrow. He plays an enchantment and hits me for like 2. Sure, I'll go to 18. Play a land, ramp spell, go. And then he gets another enchantment and then swings for like 3. I was like, sure, I will go down to 15. And then I play a Steve and he swings again. And I block with Steve, sack him, search for land. And then so he's got this dude who's probably maybe like a 4/4. And then I combo and kill him. And then the next game goes almost exactly the same, except he played a Boggle. He played a Boggle on turn one. That was the only difference. But yeah, he just had nothing for me. And oh, there was one time where he like, I must have played a Sakura Tribe Elder and he pathed it. And I was like, whatever. I was like, I can sack it and get a land, or I can let the path resolve and get a land.
Do I want to shuffle?
Yeah, I'm going to get what I want either way. so that was just kind of fun how that just went straight through that. Those were quick games, too. I think we finished in, like, 15 minutes. And then, what was after that? So it's round 5. Oh, round 5. I played against Infect. Ugh, that was my second loss because Infect is dumb.
Agreed.
And so game 1, I actually did really well. I wiped his board when I needed to. I killed his creatures when I needed to. My counter spells worked when I needed them to. Combo kill. Great. Fine. Dandy. Game 2 was a little grindier, and I really just couldn't get to my answers quick enough. And so he infect damage killed me. And then game 3, turn 1, I play a land. He plays a land and, the infect elf, Glistener elf. And then, yeah, and then so turn 2, I play a land and pass, and he plays a forest, swings with a Glistener elf, and then pumps it twice or 3 times and hits me for 9 infect damage on turn 2. So then turn 3 happens and then I lose. So. That was my infect matchup. Oh god, I hate that mechanic so much. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, and the shitty part is I offered him a draw because then we'd both be in top 8 and be just fine, but he wanted to play it out even though we didn't really need to. And so I barely squeaked in at 8th, to which I had to play Mike again. Ugh. And then I played Mike again. He Blood Mooned me again, but I never drew things that would let me fetch for basics. So even though I knew the Blood Moon would be coming, I really didn't get a chance to do anything about it in one of the games anyway. Again, the other games were a little grindier, and we had some more back and forth, but...
Yeah, that game, too, was really, really a shit stomp. Like, I got my dick punched in that game. Game 1 was very good, which is rare because I flipped a Delver on turn 1 and usually get Scapeshift if they don't draw Is It Charm or Anger of the Gods. That one flipped Delver just wins the game.
Yep.
And I think I got turn 3 angered that game. So
you did. Yep.
Yep.
Which was one of those situations where I was like, I always find myself with anger. I was like, well, if I cast it now, I can't kill a bunch of things. But if I don't cast it now, I'm going to die.
Yep.
So I had to use it to get the Delvers out of the way. But that game 2, was that the one where you just couldn't flip your Delvers worth a damn?
I played a turn 1 Delver and couldn't flip it. And then I had – that was my only threat. And then it died, I think. Or I didn't ever flip it. And I think I only got you to like 14 that game. But yeah. it never flipped, and then I never drew another threat either, so.
Yeah, I electrolyzed it and hit you with the other one.
That's right. That is right, yeah.
Yeah, good times. I mean, they were good games, but I did lose. So I got my packs, yeah, opened them, got some good stuff out of my packs, so I was happy overall. But that's enough about me. Mike, why don't you tell me about some of your matches?
So mine, well, obviously, one of mine corresponds with Ethan's there, but I'll give it a little bit from my point of view. Round one, I played against that mono green infect deck, and I'm not going to say his name. He seemed like a really good guy, and he knows how to play Magic. It seemed like he was unfamiliar with the deck, though. Game one wasn't competitive at all. I flipped a turn one Delver and just had bolts and Snapcaster bolts and just ran him over after killing all of his threats. Game two, he put me to 6 infect on turn two, and then he kept playing a creature, and I would just kill it immediately. He got to 4 mana and landed a creature, and I had a bolt in hand, but I didn't have any way to stop him if he was going to protect it. So I let it go, and he attacked, and I said, no blocks, and he went to pump instead of just dealing me an extra poison. And I just killed it, and then about 3 turns later won the game because he just couldn't find another threat and protect it. Round two, I played against apparently the precursor to black-white Eldrazi, or the precursor to the colorless Eldrazi deck because Brian was playing black-white Eldrazi. This was, like, the scariest matchup for me because none of my spells... Well, I don't know what I was talking about when you got disconnected.
You had pretty much just started talking about your match with Brian and spells and something.
Oh, with Brian? Yeah, it's a horrible matchup because my spells can't kill anything that he has. Like, all of his creatures don't die to bolt or electrolyze. So, but it turns out that turn one flipped over, blind flip, I might add, is really good. Game two was an awesomely fun game. I had a slower draw. It was a Pyromancer draw, but I had 4 lands. So I Mana Leaked his Thought Not Seer. I bounced him, I electrolyzed a Mimic, and then I just started beating his face in with Snapcasters and Pyromancer tokens. he gets me to, or I get him to 3 life, and he untaps and plays a Worship. And I went, what? And he goes, Worship. And I said, well, that's awkward. And he attacks me and activates his Mutavault. And I have I attacked him and he just activates his Mutavault. And I don't have a bolt or anything in my hand. I just can't kill it.
Oh, God.
So he goes to 1. He untaps, plays a land, plays Oblivion Sower.
Oh, my God.
And I went, oh, fuck. I can't win.
Oh, fuck.
So we go back and forth like that for about 6 turns. I keep attacking in the air with my Delver just because, and he doesn't draw anything, and I finally draw a Vapor Snag. So I Vapor Snag his Oblivion Sower and won the match off of that. It was pretty sick.
Oh, wow.
Round 3 was me against Ethan again. I literally wrote down, I hate this matchup. It's the biggest problem is if I just draw the wrong cards, or the wrong combination of cards, and it has to be some of both. I have to have threats and counter spells. There's just no way I can outrace him. game one was a blur. I just remember misplaying slightly. I definitely mana leaked a Bring to Light instead of the Scapeshift that you would get off of, and I felt really dumb about that. But then you cast another Bring to Light, and all I had was 3 remands. So it was just like, okay, well, I'll stall and make tokens. And then for 4 turns in a row, you were just like, Bring to Light.
So
I was like, all right, have it again. Let's hope I can draw a real counterspell this time. And then you finally drew the 3rd land to pay for the mana leak, and I was like, oh, well, game's over. So I just let it resolve, and that was 2. Staying on basic, and I said, Blood Moon, motherfucker.
Got him.
Game 3, to be fair, game 3 of round 1, he played it very well, but he never really got off the ground. He didn't have any early ramp. He didn't have an answer for my first two creatures until like turn four or five. So I'd already dealt him like 8-10 damage. So when you get to that point, and I have four lands in hand, and I'm just like holding up counter magic, and then at the end of turn, bolt snap bolting you. There's just no way you can come back from that unless you just have the combo. Round four, I played against literally the worst matchup for Blue Red Delver on the planet. Death and Taxes, or Mono White Hate Bears, whatever Taylor calls it. I actually don't know. Game one, I should have killed him. I ended the game. He was at three, and I had five islands in hand, and my hand, or five islands in play, and my hand was Pyromancer, Bolt, Electrolyze. And he just ghost quartered me / tech edged me into oblivion. I tried to play around the tech edge that he played on turn two, and I lost to a Thalia and a Blade Splicer. Game two, he didn't have a good draw, and I did what Delver does and just beat his face in with flying insects. I drew three bolts and then played a Keranos the turn he tapped out, which was pretty gross. He'd play a creature, and I drew three straight spells off of the Keranos because he played a creature, I killed the creature, played a creature, I killed the creature, played a creature, I killed the creature, and then he just scooped. He's like, I'm done with this. Game three, I kept a pretty good hand. Turn one Delver, he path it. He didn't path it. I just couldn't flip it. He played a turn two Thalia. I had to kill the Thalia. He played a turn three Blade Splicer. I had to kill the Blade Splicer. And now I'm out of threats and didn't draw third land. Haven't flipped my Delver yet. I untap, and I think I tried to kill the Blade Splicer, and he Resto Angeled it or something, and then he untapped, hit me to like seven, and went, played Thalia number two, Blade Splicer Mirroring Crusader or something like that, and I was just like, not Blade Splicer Mirroring Crusader, Dryad Militant Mirroring Crusader, and I was just like, okay, well, nothing I can do about that. And the game was over before it even really started. Washburn was nice enough to scoop me into the first place spot, which I didn't think I would be in, to be fair. I thought he would nudge me, but...
What I do, though. Because, you know, if we draw, you're in, but even though our matchup, I think, is favorable kind of towards me...
I totally agree.
I was like, well, I don't really want to face Delver until the finals, and even if we get there, we'll just... probably split, because why not? Let's go home.
Yep, that's fair.
But, I mean, I conceded to Mike, and then we played the first game, and I think I won that one.
Yeah, on, like, turn five.
Yeah.
Yeah,
this is what Nighty Company does.
I can't counter Loxodon Smiter, and I can't kill it with lightning bolts.
Yeah!
Smiter. So, Ethan's game, we already talked about it, the both of us, so I won't go super in-depth. Game three, there was a point in game three where after I Blood Mooned him, he had like Forest Swamp up, but no blue source, or like Swamp Blue Source, but no green source. I think it was Swamp Forest and no, it couldn't have been. It had to be Blue Black because he showed me his hand after the game and he had Scapeshift, Bring to Light, and Crimson Grip in his hand. And I was like terrified because if he just draws a forest, I just lose on the spot because I had no counter magic in my hand. So I held up mana, knowing that I had no spells to interact, and just bolt snap bolted him at the end step, and then I killed him on the crackback. But it was one of those, all right, I throw my hands up in the air, I just can't kill you if you have it here, or if you rip the forest. So I went for it. Played Andy in the semifinals. I flipped another blind Delver on turn one on the play, and it dealt, let's see, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18 damage, and I bolted him.
Good God.
Yeah. I remanded a ritual on turn 6, I believe, and that's what kept him from killing me, because if he had led with the other ritual, he would have got a counter on Pyromancer's Ascension and been able to generate more mana. But he cast the other one to try and bait it out, and I just had a remand, so he just had to go for it again.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think that was a misplay at all. I think he played that correctly, but it ended up not
he ended up not getting there. Game two, he played Shivan Reef into Fetch Land, Fetch for Esteem Vents, cast two cantrips on turn two, and I played a Blood Moon. I drew all four Snapcasters that game and won off of the back of Bolt Snap Bolt three times.
Jeez.
I also dispelled, snap dispelled, two rituals on turn four. But the turn three Blood Moon was just, it was almost game over, but he showed me his hand at the end of the game and he had like, two red rituals, two mana morphos, a blue cantrip and nothing else. So like he could have blind gone for it, but it was just a bad, it would have been like a shot in the dark type thing. And then obviously in the final, Jacob Morrow scooped to me because he's terrified of me.
See, do you win against Burn though? Like, Burn a problem against Stone?
It really depends. Like, if I draw turn one threat and then, like, basically if I do the same thing they do, I'm favored because I have counterspells for their big two drops. I have counterspells for their spells, things like that. But if, gosh, what am I trying to say? If I don't draw a threat to help me, in combat with some of his creatures, then there's just no way. I'm also playing two spell snares, one spell pierce, in the main board, along with three mana leaks. So I'm not the typical remand blue red Delver deck. So, it's a little bit better for me, but it's definitely not a good matchup. Spell snares help a lot, but it's not a good matchup.
Yeah, it worked out well for me too, because once Jacob got his TCG player points, he just handed them to me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he didn't want them.
Very nice.
All right. So yeah, all three of us top eighted. It was pretty good overall. We got some all right packs and,
Yeah. I opened a Reality Smasher and Eldrazi Obligator and a Kalidus. So I did pretty well.
And I got a Kalidus, a Reality Smasher, and a Displacer.
Hmm. Very nice.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. Did you get any good pulls out of your half box or box and a half or whatever?
I opened a Nissa Voice of Zendikar, foil Dimensional Infiltrator, a Kozilek, yeah. A Thought Not Seer, what was the other one? Oh, Kozilek's Return.
Very nice.
Yeah, so I had some pretty good ones.
Good deal.
A Jorian as well. Jorian.
Oh, all right. Cool. So, yeah, that was our Modern weekend. This weekend, of course, is game day, which is standard, as you all know. I don't think there are any Grand Prix or anything like that. Is there a Star City tournament?
Probably.
When is GP Detroit?
Well,
sometime soon.
I don't know.
Let me look.
While you do that, I need to look up what the game day schedule is for Dungeon Delver.
I have it right here. One second.
Well, look at you, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Game day at Dungeon Delver is 4 p.m. on Saturday, 2 p.m. on Sunday, $10 for Saturday, $10 for Sunday. There are some Grand Prix trials happening at Dungeon Delver as well.
Horses, we'll get to that. We're doing game day now.
But we could just announce events altogether.
No. Hold your horses. Mike, what's game day looking like at GI Card Shop?
We're playing Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock. It's a $10 entry fee, but we also put three packs per person into the prize pool.
Very cool. Yeah,
should be a good time.
What are you going to be playing or just running the tournament?
Well, Saturday I'm definitely going to play. I obviously work Sunday, so I'm probably not playing that day, but I still am not 100% sure what I want to play. I've been messing around with a Grixis control deck in Standard that I kind of tweaked after seeing Jerry T's list from today, but then literally right before we started the stream, I was trolling around Goldfish and saw a pretty sick combo deck that I kind of want to try, so
I think
we'll see.
I might know the combo deck you're talking about, but
it's very possible.
I'm excited to find out what it is.
Yep, it involves the Altar from Khans of Tarkir.
Yep,
mills whenever a permanent comes into play.
I know the one.
Yes, I'm so excited.
All right. And Justin, you said you aren't going to be able to play in game day.
Nope, because I have work, and we recently had a girl leave, and so her 30 hours kind of had to get split up between us three people, and there's no way that I could possibly ask to switch anybody because there's nobody to switch with. So
bad beats.
I'm stuck working.
Wah, wah.
But that happens.
Yeah,
sometimes you just gotta work and make that money.
You gotta live the real life. That's why you have Goyce and I don't.
Gotta get that.
Yeah. Money. But I'm also saving up for Shadows Over Innistrad because I have high hopes.
There you go. I will be playing both game days at Dungeon Delver, and I'm kind of stuck between lists. I've been trying to brew up a four-color company deck, and I just don't know how to make it exactly work, especially with the mana base. And I don't really want to copy a list, because that's boring, but I might just end up doing it. I'm also very conflicted with maybe trying Mardu Green again, because it's such a good deck. I 4-0'd FNM with it last week, so, like, it does okay, but it can also just totally crap on everything you love. as what happened to me that last IQ we played at that we would have talked about last week if our technology worked. Right. So I'm kind of torn. I'll probably play one day and then the other day. So I'm not quite sure what I'm up to yet, but I was thinking about writing up a little thing about my deck decision for Card Confidants maybe this week or next week. So we'll probably talk about game day results next week. I wanna win another playmat. I haven't won one since Fate Reforged, so I could use another one.
You guys better watch out for me, because I got the monkey off my back now. I've got the itch again. I'm gonna start traveling.
Oh yeah, you wanna come to Minneapolis?
That's still probably a no.
Oh, you dick.
I'm joking. It's a maybe. It's all a right, maybe.
I'm saying no to Ethan, because me and Ethan, I asked Ethan if he wanted to go, and he's like, no, I'm going to go with my other cool friends that are going to go.
What?
So I'm like, oh, thanks.
Ethan and I.
No, I'm not English. I can't English.
All right. And when did you ask me that?
I asked you that like 3 weeks ago.
No,
I'm like, hey, here's what I said. I said, I'm going to ask Mike and Taylor and some other people if we all want to, you know, do a little road trip again like we did to Kansas City. Would you be interested in going to Minneapolis? He's like, and he literally looked at me and said, I already have some friends going, so I'm probably just going
to
go with them.
Okay,
like,
first of all, you have to be thinking of somebody else, because what I told you was that I can't guarantee I'd have a place for you to stay. Because I was going to be staying at my wife's aunt's house.
I said the floors. I could sleep on the floors.
If they're okay with that.
Oh, they'll be fine. Smuggle
in. Girls.
I don't have anyone else to go with. Who else would I go with? So
all I know is if, I don't know when Denver is this year, but if,
I don't know.
Oh, it's in December. Jesus.
Yeah.
If Spencer ends up going to Denver, I'm going with him and just sleeping in whoever's house he goes and stays with.
Yeah.
It's just happening.
If I can save up extra money by then, I will probably go to Denver if I can as well. Although that one, is that standard or modern?
Denver is standard. Denver's almost always standard.
Neat. Anyway, so, yeah. Justin, what did you want to say about the Grand Prix trials?
All right, so Dungeon Delver is doing some Grand Prix trials in New York. Now, when they were trying to decide which Grand Prix, Spencer personally messaged me and said, would you want to go to Nagoya or New York? And obviously I was like, I want to go to Nagoya. But they decided on New York because that's the more reasonable option.
Who would have thought?
Yeah, well,
so on February 27th, there is a standard Grand Prix trial. It is $10 at 1 p.m. So try to arrive early, like 12 p.m., you know. I don't know if there's going to be deck registration for any of these. March 12th is Modern, $10, 1 p.m. as well.
Awesome. There's also going to probably be Grand Prix trials later in March and April for Minneapolis. So
yep.
To watch out for those if we plan on going to Minneapolis.
Stay tuned, boys.
And girls.
And girls.
God, sorry. You sexist bastard.
I know, I'm such a racist.
For those of you who don't know, Mike is black. anyway. So
I just have to wear a shirt.
Well, it doesn't matter, it's a podcast.
I know. That's the point. 100%.
Anyway, you guys have anything else you wanted to say before we call it quits for the night?
No, just that I enjoy I had a very good time. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to sound conceited. I enjoyed winning, but I enjoyed just going to a tournament and playing well and not putting myself on tilt. I haven't done that in a long time, and I've done it twice in like the last 4 or 5 months, and it feels really good. Really, really good. When we went to Kansas City, I didn't tilt myself. I just played Magic. And at that day, it was more of a stretch because I was playing a control deck. And on Saturday, I just felt like I was sitting down to play Magic with a bunch of people.
Yeah, that's one thing I've always liked about Dungeon Delver Game Supplies in Hastings, Nebraska, is it always kind of feels like that because we're all so crammed together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very true.
I like it. Justin, anything from you?
I was, regardless of how I was going to do that day, I was like, you know what, I get to play the Modern deck that, you know, I've been talking to Taylor Kluska a lot because, you know, he is the guy I go for all Zoo-type variants, including Naya Company. And I just talked out sideboard options with him, and I think that really helped me because then I figured out what against, even though there were some weird rogue decks like a blue-red Delver variant. You know, it wasn't quite the blue-red Stark Delver list, but it was the same. So I had a good time. I got third, which is... And I just love playing Magic.
Yay!
So, that's all I got.
Heck yeah.
All right, let's see here. I'm going to get my... as always, this show is brought to you by Dungeon Delver Gaming Supplies in Hastings, Nebraska. I say their name enough, you'd think you'd know that by now. If you want a little bit more of us, I'm trying to get better at posting about it regularly, but you can follow the podcast on Twitter at MidwestMagicMTG. You can follow me at NerdBeat, Justin at JMoney981, and Mike at BoroflothMTG.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds more like Borofills to me.
Yeah. Borofills, you're a funny man. Okay, that's all we got. We're excited for game day. Go play some Magic. Let's have some fun. Midwest Magic Podcast. Yay.
I'm out.
Bye.
Peace, bitches.
No, don't call our listeners.
You can't call people bitches.
Peace, nice people.
There we go.